get generic drugs unless a doctor specifically orders them and prescribes them. This flips it around and says you may be given generic drugs with the consent of the patient. In other words, it's going to be a major cost savings unless the doctor says you can't give it. For sub I, line 18 through 22, that the drug greater liability in giving a generic than he would or she would in giving the name brand drug. And three, revives the old in the pharmacy post in a conspicuous location, a sign that says that the patient may, with your consent, you may, with your consent, be given a therapeutically equivalent generic drug. It's consumer notice for them. Secondly, Section 5 is just a conforming amendment and grammatical. The drug and the non-prescription drug definitional sections are updated, and all of these have been worked out with the pharmacy board and approved by them and approved also by the Pharmacy Association, State Pharmacy Association. I like the bill. And the rest of the bill just repeals what's called the Marijuana Therapeutic Research Act, which was an old state law, was never really implemented, allowing marijuana to be prescribed in certain cases like glaucoma and cancer. And now there have been certain drugs that have been approved by the FDA, so you don't need to have the state law anymore, and it should be a non-controversial amendment. And this bill, the generic drug provisions have received lots of support. The Daily News has supported them in Anchorage and Older Persons Action Group. And I thank you for having me hearing the bill, and I hope that I can answer any questions.
Howard Weaver in the Anchorage Action Group. Mr. Greenberg, may I inquire? One question I have is the sign on lines 25 through 27 of page 2 is not really descriptive of the situation that would prevail. As I understand it, it isn't just the patient's consent, but the doctor is involved in whether there should be substitution.
No. Unless the doctor has said you may not be given.
Well, that's what I mean. But the point is that the quotation is, under Alaska law, a therapeutically equivalent but less expensive drug may, with your consent, be substituted for the drug prescribed by your doctor. Please consult your pharmacist or a physician. I don't, it's not a big issue with me, but in fact, if the prescription says no substitutions and the sign is wrong, it doesn't matter whether there's a consent by the patient or not, there's not going to be a substitution.
Well, yeah, that's correct. This is identical to the law that was in effect several years ago. That law was, by its own term, sunset. It was only a 2-year law. The only change we've made is the addition of the language "with your consent," and the word "may," I suppose you could technically say, is means may as you know, you may or may not, depending on the circumstances, as opposed to permissive. And I suppose if you wanted to change the language, then we take it. But in the closing days of the session, if we change this around, I'm afraid it'll get lost in the shuffle in my body, and I would hope. And unless it's a good thing with you, I don't have a problem, but I don't want to see the bill get lost in the shuffle. And I think I'm authorized to say that on behalf of Pat Clasby, who's here, on behalf of the Alliance for the Mentally Ill, the Alaska Alliance for Mentally Ill, that they do support the bill. So I don't want to forget that.
Representative Greenberg, we're kind of a persnickety committee around here. If there's something that wording that leaves us in doubt, we may change that, because we're well aware that it only takes a concurring vote on the other side,
sure.
So we'll look at it. One thing that comes to mind to me is that as we look at this, there are a number of sections, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of things that are in 98, aren't there?
Not that I'm aware of, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Nancy, are you aware? No, Nancy says no.
Are there questions on part of members of the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Nancy Dunn from the Division of Occupational Licensing. The division worked extensively with the House Hess Committee on this bill, and we do support the provisions that Representative Greenberg identified already. There's nothing else in the bill at this point to speak to, just that we did work with the board and with the committee extensively on the bill.
What is your opinion on the wording that Senator Josephson was asking about?
Senator Fahrenkamp, I'm not sure I understood the question that you raised.
Okay. Senator Josephson.
What I envision happening, and nobody has contacted me about this, so it may just be not that big a deal. But what could happen is that a customer comes into the pharmacy and says, I see your sign there, and I want to have a therapeutically equivalent but less expensive drug. And the pharmacist says, but this prescription has a notation from the doctor, no substitutions. And then the customer says, yeah, but your sign tells me that by law I have the right to require the substitution. I mean, you get into that kind of an argument. And it seems to me, I don't want to make the sign very long, but if the sign were really accurate, it would say, you know,
unless your doctor
has prescribed otherwise, or, yeah.
Madam Chairman, I think that the addition of the language would be a helpful clarification. I don't see that it would in any way mislead the consumer. It would probably make it clearer that it is the doctor's prerogative to decide that the drug should or should not be a generic drug.
Are there further questions, members of the committee? Thank you very much, Nancy. Rick Urien?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Rick Urien. I represent the Alaska State Medical Association. And basically, the bill before you, as it's written, we have no problem with. Although we would encourage you to add to this bill an amendment, which I believe you have in your packets, which speaks to the state drug registration numbers required by physicians administered by the Board of Pharmacy. As you know, the state legislative budget and audit report done last year, we suggested that this was a needless duplication of effort and requiring a lot of work, unnecessary work on the part of the Board of Pharmacy and the physicians who have are registered by the federal government. I think it's find it to be a needless piece of paper work to fill out every year, and we would encourage you to add that amendment to the bill and make it something more meaningful.
Excuse me, Rick. Did you have difficulty in the other body in trying to get that amendment adopted?
We had. I guess so, because it's not adopted. But we have a lot of support on the other body for that amendment. I can only say that.
Are there questions on the part of members of the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pete, Attorney General's Office. Ready?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Peter Freilich, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General. I guess I'm here primarily answer questions about the controlled substances amendment idea that Mr. Urien just mentioned. Actually, at the request of both the staff of the House Has Committee and of this committee early in the session, I worked on language that would address the problem raised by the audit report, which is essentially the duplicative burden put on DEA registrants and to some extent on the Division of Occupational Licensing to enforce a separate layer of registration. The reason that was initially put into the Alaska statutes was that there has been a historic problem of DEA not really being very active in their enforcement of the federal law in Alaska. That was the motivation for a separate state layer in the early 80s. The approach that I came up with, and this was in consultation with the Department of Public Safety and the occupational licensing people in Department of Commerce, and also the criminal division of the Department of Law, was essentially to remove the burden of separate state registration, but to impose a state requirement that people comply with the federal law, so that, in other words, if they do not comply with federal DEA law, they're not only committing a federal crime, but also a state crime, and taking all responsibility in this area away from the Department of Commerce and from the Board of Pharmacy, and placing it with the Department of Public Safety, which had an overlapping existing responsibility. All parties seemed in agreement to this, and as I recall, one of the main concerns was that perhaps the whole subject was too complicated to deal with in this bill, the main purpose of which was a sunset continuation. But I guess I'd just answer any questions about that controlled substance subject if I can.
Then, Pete, does the amendment as opposed by Mr. Ewan take care of your, is it worded in such a way as to take care of your, that you would have your approval, or would you suggest some variation?
Well, Madam Chairman, I guess I can't really speak to the exact amendment because I haven't seen the one that you have in your files, but I have.
It was prepared by your office.
We've got.
If it's the same as this, then yes, I have a 3.5 pages that were prepared by myself and Gail Horetsky. This was in March, and that would.
We have that. In
that addresses the concerns of the medical association. The Department of Law, both criminal, civil, and satisfactory to public safety.
Are there questions, other members?
Madam Chair, this has been an area that's been of concern in either getting dollars to enforce it on the part of the Board of Pharmacy, or on the other hand, people seeing it as duplicate. But what I'd like to know is ask you very directly, if the problems that led to the state enacting this law was because the feds were not doing a good job of enforcement here, what kind of a burden are we putting on the pharmacist if we say that you have to provide Department of Public Safety with the proof that you have complied under federal law? What's going to happen? I guess, why didn't we do this in the first place? Because it seems simple. We shouldn't have a duplicative situation. We have not provided dollars so that we're doing any better, but what kind of a burden, how's it going to work out there if we pass this amendment?
Well, under this amendment, Senator, Madam Chairman, there would not be a burden, really. The existing burden that is imposed but is not really being fully complied with would be eliminated. People who have DEA numbers would not be required to register with the state, with any state agency, nor even to provide copies of their federal registration to the state. Rather, they would be required to, under 1730-020G, provide evidence of their federal registration to a state peace officer upon request of that peace officer. So it shifts it from a prospective state registration approach to a problem or a complaint-oriented approach. If a peace officer is investigating something, has reason to believe there's something to investigate, they ask for a person for their copy or for evidence of their federal compliance. And likewise, they also would have authority under 020F to inspect premises, which would be medical offices or pharmacies generally, in a reasonable manner, reasonable times, to examine records that are required to be kept by the federal law. There's a limitation on that inspection power, so that it specifically cannot extend to financial data, pricing data, et cetera.
Further questions?
No, I'm just trying to see if where the public is losing on this. If we're not doing it now, at least we're making, already under federal law, they have to comply with this. We're merely saying that we're going to suspend, in a sense, regulation by commerce, by our Department of Commerce. So the public isn't, I guess they're not losing anything that they didn't have if we weren't enforcing the law. I'm just trying to see from a matter of public protection what we're doing.
I think that's right, Senator. And one, frankly speaking, one of the problems with the existing statutes remaining untouched is that there are obligations being imposed on practitioners that are not being met by a large percentage of the practitioners. And likewise, there's duties imposed on the pharmacy board and the Department of Commerce that are not being met. So those being on the books and not being followed results in potential exposure to liability for ignoring unworkable law.
Madam Chair, the question would be in the final analysis in terms of protection of the public, if there are abuses of the federal law, are we, by doing away with this, have we taken away any ultimate responsibility of that pharmacy to, in other words, the federal law offers the protection. If it's not being enforced, I guess the public isn't losing anything by our taking away the state law as long as the federal law is there.
That's right, Senator. And we are empowering the state peace officers, generally the Department of Public Safety, to enforce the federal law in effect without imposing a burden on the practitioners. So the federal law remains the same. We don't expect that the enforcement is going to increase by the federal DEA is going to increase, but we, by following this approach, we'll be authorizing, clearly authorizing state police officers to enforce the federal law, essentially. So we are not sacrificing any public protection or public safety.
All right. Was there anything in the state law that we're losing that was not, that is not contained in the federal law? What, in other words, is the state law basically parallel construction?
Yes, but we are losing things like the requirement to register with the state in addition to register with the federal DEA.
No, I'm talking about basic powers.
But in terms of the final effect, in terms of public safety, the goal here is to try to control and limit the diversion of legal prescription drugs into illicit trade. And the Department of Public Safety and the Criminal Division of our department feel that that goal is furthered equally or perhaps more so by this, the approach in these amendments.
Are there further questions, members of the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify concerning this legislation? Yes. Please come up and identify yourself.
Jerry Race. A newly appointed member of the Pharmacy Board. First, I'd like to speak to what Senator Josephson said. I think that's a real good idea to clear up that language. I know that we've recently had a problem with a generic drug that Dr. Akiyama uses here, that he finds that it's, although it costs about $14 a hundred, as opposed to the brand name, which is $34 or above a hundred to the patient. He feels that the generic is just not therapeutically equivalent, and so he has switched all the patients back, we have no choice but to do that. And I think that signage needs to be so that we just don't get in a lot of hot water over the thing, because in this case he's very adamant about the selection of this particular drug for heart patients. As for the DEA amendment, I just don't quite understand it as a pharmacist. It seems to me a duplication of the law. It seems to me that if I bought 1,000 Percodan and went out and sold them on the street, that would hit the street pretty fast. and somebody would investigate that.
Well, how do you feel about having to register both places?
My personal opinion is, and probably get in trouble with the pharmacy board, but I don't like having to register twice. And I know the employer that I work for at present doesn't like that either. I don't see any need for the duplication. I think there is a need to straighten out all the... It seems that there has been a tremendous battle between the pharmacy board in the past and the Department of Commerce and different departments, and I understand politics a little bit. But I think that there's a whole need to look at the whole spectrum of who's going to inspect what and where whose bailiff that's going to fall into. There's been a change of ownership of a drugstore over in Sitka. It used to be Fry's, now it's changing to White's Drugstore. Well, they're a nice young couple that own this pharmacy, and I'm sure very legitimate. But somebody really needs to go and inspect that pharmacy, and it's in the law. Well, there's no money to do that. I got a letter the other day saying it'd be nice if you go inspect that pharmacy, but pay your own way over there. And if I get a chance sometime, maybe I'll drop in and do it, because Trish White is saying, geez, you know, I'm 20-some years old. I want my records in order. I'm sure Sid Fry, who was on the pharmacy board, was a legitimate character, but I don't know whether he ever did anything with drugs. So there's a whole problem, and the same up north, there's a whole problem with other things besides controlled drugs. And I think that was one of the reasons that we didn't want any other legislation getting muddied up with the extension of the board and stuff, because there is with the new generation of pharmaceuticals that are coming out, they're very, very potent drugs, and there has to be somebody making sure that they're dispensed properly. And I don't care whether it's Commerce personally or who does it, public safety, whatever, but I think the whole situation needs to be, there has to be some sort of inspections of pharmacies, not just for dangerous drugs, but for to make sure that pharmacists on a whole are up on what they're doing. And
we just passed legislation that added a whole list of all the generic drugs to the list of drugs that were to be controlled. So,
yeah,
you know, we're trying to make steps in that direction.
Yeah, I think you guys are doing a very good job. But I think there's a whole, this is just to do one little piecemeal thing on dangerous drugs when you got the legislation in place on the federal level. I just don't see at this point what good that's going to do, because I think it's just needless government. That's my own opinion.
Madam Chair,
you're confusing about that.
Right.
You're confusing me, because it seems to me, through your testimony, you're saying, well, we do need to have people that inspect, we do need to have control, and we don't like the duplication, and yet I'm not sure whether
right.
you're favoring an amendment or opposing an amendment.
I'm just saying that I'm confused with the amendment, too. Because I think it should be done in one big fell swoop where somebody, I know I left the state for a period of time and worked in Colorado, and they had licensed inspectors that came around your pharmacy twice a year, and they dropped in unannounced, and they inspected went through your records. And the Treasury Department for the state also had somebody that came through every now and then, which when the computer would kick out on dangerous drugs, if you were dispensing too much of them, and he'd show up maybe once every 3 years, once every 2 years, and there was no subpoena or anything, he would just show up.
Seems to me that's what they're trying to do with
right.
the amendment.
Right, that's what is what they're trying to do. But there's more to it than just the dangerous drugs. I mean, I don't want a bunch of different inspectors coming in. I think if you're going to do it,
very well. Are there further questions? Thank you. Would anyone care to respond to any testimony they heard so far? Nancy?
Thank you.
I'll close this now in 2 minutes. So.
Yes, Madam Chairman. I'd like to respond to Jerry Race's comments. I think there's just a little bit that needs to be clarified here. The existing statutes allow for the pharmacist to inspect pharmacies for conditions other than abuse of controlled substances, and I believe what he's referring to is the lack of a budget to do so in any consistent fashion. That's an issue that's separate from, I think, the statutory issues in front of us today. It's something that I'd be happy to talk about more with him it's a legitimate issue, but it won't be addressed by this statute. It's already in place. We just need to fund it or figure out how to get those inspections accomplished, not by peace officers necessarily, and I think that's the issue. I just want to add my support to this amendment, now that the amendment is before you, to say that I definitely favor repeal of the registration as duplicative. And knowing that you want to close it in 2 minutes, I'll leave it at that unless you have any questions.
Are there further questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify concerning this legislation? Then it would be my intention to have, while we're working, staff look over possible amendment and wording on your part, if you would, before we move this legislation and try to get moved today with...
We haven't been drafted on that.
Okay. The, what is your pleasure?
I would move the amendment.
Amendment number one?
Yes.
And could that
after doctor, delete the period and insert when your doctor has specified otherwise?
Unless your doctor has.
Unless your doctor. Okay.
Specified.
I never could read. UNLESS does not spell men, right? Do you ask unanimous consent?
I ask unanimous consent.
Ma'am,
is there objection? Mm.
No problem.
Hearing none, so be it.
I would move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the proposed amendment, which deals with the registration requirements of the Federal Social Security Act.
Is there objection? So be it. With that in mind, then we will have committee substitute go across the desk today, right? Any minutes up? If they can't draft to see Ferguson. What is your pleasure concerning the committee substitute?
I move the bill as amended with individual recommendation.
Is there objection? So be it. Going now, please, to Senate Bill 415, relating to school board composition, Senator Ferguson. My apologies for keeping you waiting.
Oh, that's all right. Madam Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 414 was introduced on behalf of the Northwest Arctic School District, the current school district that has 11 board members. This would allow for the new borough, should they vote to form the borough, to have their school board at the same level they have now. There's zero fiscal note. The school district has money to keep the number of school board members on. My understanding is that boroughs essentially have up to 7 people on right now, I believe. And depending on how many students you have, I think it's 5,000 on down, you have 5 members. We only have 1,500 school districts in our area, but it is school districts that are separated by hundreds of miles, and the board representation now satisfies the Department of Justice civil
right.
Yeah. And if they stayed in the status quo, then they could have an election for the school board members when that time comes in the future. Otherwise, they would have to reapportion the whole district and have the feds come in and check them. So basically, that's why the bill is introduced.
And as I understand it, Senator, this is done by a vote of those people involved?
That's right.
Are there questions from members of the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Bob Green?
She's not in the
bed. Okay. What is your pleasure concerning this legislation?
Madam Chair, I move to deal with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? So be it. How's our time? We have approximately 5 minutes, so let's, House Bill 497, relating to custody support visitation birth certificates, Senator Joseph, as your subcommittee, you have prepared some legislation, I understand?
Madam Chair, I have, and I have discussed this with Representative Grunberg in the House, with yourself, and with Betty Ramage from the Women's Commission, and I think the language we propose is acceptable. In Section 1, on lines 16, 17, and 18, the language would require the court to inquire on the record of any party giving testimony or present whether the agreements are in the best interest of the child and whether either parent has been subjected to duress or coercion. This replaces the old language, which asks the court to examine the agreements to ensure that the agreements are in the best interest, since, as we said before, there'd be no way to do that except by reading documents. And on page 2, if the chair recalls, members recall, we had some discussion about the second sentence in subsection F, which appeared to invite the court to depart somewhat from the direct well-being of the child consideration as the paramount consideration. And I think it also created a conflict with subsection subsection D of AS 2524-150, which says that in awarding custody, the court may consider only those facts that directly affect the well-being of the child. The new language proposed is that the subsection does not prohibit the court from considering the impact of a custody award on either parent, but only to the extent such impact is proved to have a direct and substantial impact on the best interest of the child. Court officials indicated that Section 3 would create an additional burden because it would require that in all cases, whether the court accepted the agreement or departed from the agreement, the court would have to reason through each of the factors contained in existing law, Section 150C, which I attached a copy of. That would be a kind of difficult exercise to go through if we were just approving a document presented to you, or where you only had one party before you, for example, to consider the religious and social needs of the child, et cetera. And so new language only requires that the court note on the record or in its award that it has considered the factors rather than have to go into a reasoning process on each one.
Are there questions of the chairman of the subcommittee? Do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I would move, but ask unanimous consent, that the draft presented to us today be accepted as a Senate committee substitute for House Bill 497.
Ask unanimous consent?
I ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? What is your
pleasure? I move it as unanimous consent that the bill be moved with individual recommendations to the Senate committee substitute.
Is there objection? So be it. For those that are waiting to testify concerning SB 297, that bill is not officially before us until after this next session of the legislature. We'll get right back together. I'm asking for
which one is that?
297 licenses of naturopaths.
Oh, okay.
I will ask for a 5-day for a waiver of the 5-day rule. We'll come together immediately following the session and continue with our work there so that it moves along today. HJR 61 relating to access to basic health care services for Alaskans has a zero fiscal note. This Representative Copeland is not here. Dave Williams is here.
I'm here.
Dave, would you please come up?
I'm Dave Williams with the Department of Health Social Services, ma'am.
What is your feeling concerning the resolution?
As we have a position paper which has been distributed on that. It's basically, I think, the commissioner's reaction was that rather than put in a fiscal note that would have some appropriation called for, that we would work with the House Health Committee on this project, the study that's named towards the end of the resolution. And I think we have some agreement with them as to who will do what on that, and we'll come up with a study by March of next year.
Then you would support
Yes, we're in support of it.
Thank you very much. Are there questions on part of the member of this committee? Is there anyone else to testify concerning this legislation? What is the pleasure of the committee?
I think that's unanimous consensus that the resolution be adopted.
Is there objection? So be it. Would you please come together? We will recess until 5 minutes following the call, the adjournment till tomorrow of the session of Senate.